This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 210 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, I guess we owe our listeners an apology since this is coming out a day late, but we're both sort of been busy. Let's just leave it at that.
Yes.
So I apologize to our listeners. But we've got a good show. We've got ICAO, once a global drone database. Is it database or database? Never sure about that one.
I guess take your pick.
A multi-rotor endurance record. A magazine goes back to its roots. Or drone 360 does a 360. Tracking drones with cellular networks. Hurricane Irma coverage and drones supporting that disaster area in Florida. And more about swarming drones. Gotta love those swarms.
I do like swarms.
You mean to tell me you like swarms better than fuel cells?
It's a tough call, no. David. It's a tough
call. Well, let's get started, shall we? Well, our first story is from Reuters. UN Aviation Agency to call for global drone registry. ICAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization, is proposing a global database of drone owners, much along the model of what we had set up for the FAA here. What do you think?
Yeah, before that got struck down. This is an idea that they're promoting, that ICAO is, and we don't know a lot about it yet, but we will shortly, and we'll say why in just a second. But this database would include consumer drones, commercial drones, public service, military drones, not so sure at this point. But the idea is that there would be one global database instead of each country having its own local databases. So it's a consolidated database. And the idea is they could remotely identify and track drones in their operators. But what we have, David, coming up in just a few days, in fact, September 22 and 23, is the ICAO Drone Enable Unmanned Aircraft Systems Industry Symposium. And that's up at their headquarters in Montreal. And they have in the program one item that suggests they're going to talk about this registration system that they're proposing.
They want to include its purpose, intended functionality, and interaction with national registration systems. How do you interact with a now defunct system? It would be great if the FAA system could get uploaded into ICAO, but right now you can't. And boy, is this going to be a lot of privacy concerns, don't you think?
Yeah, there certainly are a lot of issues that I think are going to be raised concerning a single global database. It'll be interesting to see how ICAO responds to them. It'll be interesting to see how the member countries react to this proposal. There's some other items in this Drone Enable Symposium coming up. Day one, if you look at the program, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes, actually. There's a PDF that describes the program, the speakers, and so forth. But day one is pretty heavy into harmonization. And there are several sessions dedicated to that. One is looking at a full regulatory framework for RPAS, remotely piloted aircraft systems. And they say a new approach to support global harmonization of UAS provisions in a domestic environment. And there's another session, a common framework with core boundaries for global harmonization. And this session is described as an opportunity to showcase several submissions from experts that describe a common framework for UTM that could be implemented by all states. States, of course, being the member states, the countries that are part of ICAO. So I think it's definitely laudable that this global organization, it's a UN organization, ICAO is, that they're really, I guess, stepping up and taking a look at drone use across the globe and saying that, well, it's, you know, the same issues in different countries. The question is, the big question is, will they be able to arrive at some kind of a consensus that's acceptable to all the membership? That's kind of a tough one, don't you think?
I think so. And just so everybody knows, I got excited because when I saw harmonization, I thought, wow, four-part or Baroque or barbershop. And then I read the article and went, oh, not what I was thinking. Like with everything with the UN, it's tough. It's kind of the herding cats, you know. Governments don't like giving up their power to another power. And though I have to admit, ICAO is successful in standardization for most countries. So maybe they do have a chance to follow through and become the leading regulator for UASs. But it's going to be tough.
One thing that might come out if it doesn't go the full global acceptance, is that it may end up creating templates or roadmaps, models that countries, if they choose, can follow as a best practice. There may be some value in that, at least. Certainly, it seems like a lot of experts, a lot of good minds are coming together here for this symposium, and there ought to be some good thinking that comes out of it that hopefully is applicable in many countries, even if they don't all agree on a single approach. But we'll wait and see what happens September 22nd and 23rd, 2017, and we'll really be eager to see what the result is. I think that from the symposium, David, all we'll find out, I guess, is what the proposal is and maybe what the plan is to go forward with it. The actual development of the proposal is probably something that's to come. But in any event, we have a link in the show notes to the Drone Enable website and also the event guide and directory, and you can take a look at that. And again, there's a lot of interesting speakers in there. Hopefully some of you listening will have an opportunity to attend.
And if you do attend, send us some feedback at feedback@theUAVDigest. Max and I would love to hear your thoughts on the symposium. Records. Records are meant to be broken, you know, and you're never going to see a quadcopter on the front of a Wheaties box. But Skyfront had a drone builder, had a UAV flight, a multirotor of more than 4.5 hours. That's a long flight for a multirotor. What do you think, Max?
It is. Normally you think, well, let's see, how can you generate power for the electric motors for that length of time? And of course, one solution that we've talked about is fuel cells. Another approach is, see, we got it in there. Another approach is what Skyfront is doing. And this is actually a hybrid electric drone. There's an internal gasoline engine, and that in turn, that turns a generator. The generator, according to Skyfront, produces an unregulated direct current voltage. There are power electronics in the system that regulates the voltage, drives the electric motors for the rotors. And there's also, and this is a great idea, there's also a small battery backup that's available to provide some assistance boost as well as backup. So yeah, 4 hours, 34 minutes. There's a video, we'll have a link to this in the show notes. It's a simple video. It's a time-lapse video. There's a clock in the foreground, so kind of demonstrating how long this quadcopter was up there.
Come on, Max. I wanted you to not tell everybody that it was a 4-hour and 34-minute real-time video that you'd had to watch. You had to spoil it by a time-lapse video, huh?
Yeah, it's just a couple of minutes long. The quadcopter is called the Tailwind, and which was kind of, I guess, appropriate as they were flying. There was some winds flying. They said between 8 and 10 miles an hour. There were some gusts up to 15. The other point that we might make is that the drone was tethered. Now, there was no power or anything associated with the tether, but it was tethered because they say the owner of the field where this test was conducted required it. Another interesting thing, David, if you look at the at their website, the Skyfront website, and look at the folks involved in this, it's a really young team. They have great credentials, but it's a very, very young team. They say we are physicists, engineers, entrepreneurs, aviation fanatics, and roboticists. And they say their mission is to transform drones from toys into mission-capable aircraft. We build drones that have the same performance and safety as manned aircraft, but are a hundredth of the cost. Check out Skyfront. And again, we'll have links in the show notes.
You know, and I thought they were going to boldly go where no drone has gone before.
Maybe that as well.
it's a Prius. I kind of like, you know, we haven't really talked much about blended
Hybrid
modes, hybrid kind of motive power. Thank you. Hybrid motive power. Is this the next step? You know, we've got hybrids. We've had gasoline powered, fuel cell operated, and electric operated or battery driven. And now we've got a hybrid. Maybe we're going to start going down that route. What do you think? You're the engineer.
Well, don't know. Certainly sounds like a viable option. Skyfront expects to continue developing this and create even longer endurances. We'll see. I don't know anything really about the gasoline engine, combustion engine that's used in this. I don't know if it's something like you might see in an RC airplane or if it's some other kind of engine. Don't know. Certainly be interested in finding out more about that. But they're even considering that kind of hybrid approach for commercial aircraft, for airliners, where you'd have, instead of big jet engines hanging from the wings or attached to the fuselage, you'd have electric motors and then a single turbine, probably integral with the body, so it's not out there creating drag, that runs generators to create the electricity. It's an option that's being looked at. So, yeah, why not in drones as well?
Well, we've got some bad news. It's about Drone 360, which is a really good magazine that I enjoy. Unfortunately, their September and October 27 issue will be their last publication. No, they're not going away, but they're moving back to the interwebs and leaving the tactile paper, being able to enjoy the sensory.
You liked that stuff, didn't you?
Max, I'm a historian. I like books. I like paper. I like magazines. I grew up reading a lot of magazines. Yes, it's real easy to read it on my laptop or my iPad or my phone, but give me a book any day. Okay, I'm off my soapbox now. But so they're returning to Discover Magazine, which is a good thing, where it started as a blog. And bottom line is people don't read paper anymore.
Yeah, it's a tough format to make a commercial go at. And in the Drone 360 magazine piece, they say that the audience for the paper magazine, it didn't grow at the rate that was anticipated. So they're back. The URL that they've used remains valid. So drone360mag.com. drone360mag.com. Drone360mag.com still takes you there. In fact, I tried it, and there are a number of articles there, including our next one that was really a very interesting article, David.
Yeah, by a friend of the show, Leah Reich. Though, Max, I want to just dovetail or make one additional comment before we go on. I don't think the target audience for Drone 360 does read magazines anymore.
Yeah.
They're all technology focused, and they'll read it online. I think the minority of us old school guys that want to read a magazine is, in this industry, probably few and far between.
It does seem reasonable to suspect that, which, it's a shame. Because, yeah, like you, I kind of like the magazine format.
Okay, so let's get talking about 5G connectivity. Well, I'm going to defer to you because you talk about this on that other podcast you do, the PAX X podcast. You're always talking about connectivity, you know, and I look out the window. That I'm going to defer to you. So I know what LTE is. I know what 4G is. Not sure what 5G is.
Well, you know, the next thing in terms of capacity and speed. Leah talks about a number of different topics in this piece that include things about, you know, integrating manned and unmanned aircraft. She has a little discussion about what ADS-B is, what it offers. She mentions UAvionics in their offering of the Ping ADS-B transceiver. That's that little tiny, tiny transceiver that we've talked about. They look at large numbers of drones needing to be tracked, needing to avoid manned aircraft and each other. And the issue comes up, one of the issues that comes up is congestion with communications. What's going to handle all this communications? ADS-B is probably not designed to handle millions of drones or hundreds of thousands of drones flying around. Lee also notes that in this piece that ADS-B is really a safety technology, not a tracking technology. And for tracking, when it comes to large numbers of drones, the cellular networks may offer a better solution. Now, a quote from her, she says, companies both in and out of the commercial drone industry, such as Precision Hawk and Verizon, are actively testing cellular network capabilities with various UAS traffic management projects to build an air traffic management infrastructure for drones, but the work is in its infancy. So she is looking ahead and saying, okay, maybe the way we can do this is utilizing the cellular network, either the existing network or the next step, 5G, the next thing coming along. When it comes to managing the airspace. But she does note a couple of things that kind of need to be resolved.
Cellular networks need to come together on standards for drone communications. We've talked about this a lot, Max, and as we get to the end of 2017, I can't believe I'm saying that, one of the things that we talked about at the beginning of the year was standardization across the board, and we still, I thought we'd see more of that this year, but it doesn't seem to be the case. There has to be standards and accepted standards, you kind of get the impression that DJI is building their own standards and hoping everybody else via the Microsoft method. If we build it this way, everybody else will follow us. the other part about it is at altitudes, drones connect to multiple towers. Yeah, that's cell technology, it's still line of sight. But if you're at altitude, your line of sight is far better than when you're driving around in your neighborhood.
Right.
So how does the drone know what cell to listen to, kind of thing? That's a really good point of technology, and maybe that technology will help us with our iPhone 10s or X's. I haven't quite figured out what those are yet, but
tens.
I mean, it's interesting that this technology is pushing ahead technologies that we've already grown accustomed to. But cellular networks might be right, but there's probably still some limitations. So moving on, over the last 4 weeks, 3 weeks, if there was ever a set of events that proved drones have positive impact, it would be Hurricane Irma and Hurricane, why do I want to say Henry? What am I missing?
Harvey.
Harvey, yes. Okay, folks, the reason why I can't remember Harvey is because in my universe, Harvey is a white rabbit that nobody sees, except Henry, my favorite pilot for the Strategic Air Command. But so I can't remember. Harvey just does not, can't have a negative connotation to me. So, but okay, Harvey, let's start that again. In the last couple of weeks, two events, Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma, and possibly Hurricane Juan, that's barreling up the coast, have provided opportunities to show the rest of the world how good drones can be in these kind of environments. And got to give it credit. There's a lot of people out there doing really good work with drones.
The FAA tells us that as of September 15th, they've issued 132 airspace authorizations for drones in Florida in response to Hurricane Irma. So, I mean, that's a great number. It kind of mirrors what we saw with Harvey in Texas. One of the really fascinating things, I think, about this this press release from the FAA is they give some examples of organizations using drones in Florida. And, I mean, they're all great examples. The Air National Guard used drones to perform aerial surveys. U.S. Customs and Border Protection brought some drones into Florida to help map areas in places like Key West and Miami and Jacksonville. And they were using radar to survey geographic points on infrastructure such as power plants for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And there's some other great examples as well.
Yeah, Airbus Aerial is helping insurance companies act more quickly on claims from coming in from the drone owners. Yay, let's hear it from my industry.
The homeowners, not the drone owners.
From homeowners. It's a great way to survey rooftops without having to climb ladders. I got to give that credit. And the quicker you can do a realistic survey and get the data, the quicker it is for an adjuster to write a check, which is really what we want to do in the industry, is we really are designed to pay claims. I mean, we want to help. The J, or the Jacksonville Electric Authority, used drones to assist with power restoration to ensure the safety of its crews. They would get some damage assessments with the drone done within 24 hours after the storm passed through. So there was a lot of activity where people were prepped and locked, and when it was ready to go, they were able to go. And the FAA facilitated that with the Type 107 exclusions, etc. But there was more.
Yeah, Florida Power and Light. They had, now get this, 49 drone teams out there surveying different parts of Florida, places that were not accessible by vehicles. Now they say some of the drone operators that Florida Power and Light hired were flying within an hour after the storm winds subsided. So, like you say, they were locked and loaded, like you say, David, ready to start right away. The Florida Power and Light also cited the recovery effort as a stellar example of cooperation by local, state, and federal authorities. They particularly gave kudos to the FAA. So the right answer all around, just great use of the technology to accomplish these things much, much more quickly than would have been the case otherwise. So,
and the other interesting thing was we really didn't hear a lot of people going rogue with their own drones. You know, we've had so many times where we've heard someone going rogue with a fire out west. We didn't hear that much with the two hurricanes in Texas and Florida.
Yeah.
So kudos to everybody out there for flying right, flying smart, and succeeding, because it makes us look really good when it's done right, you know?
And yes.
How do we get people more comfortable with the idea of using UAVs for good? These were two really good examples that 4 years ago, Max, when we started this, I don't think we'd even could imagine people launching drones to help rescue people immediately after a Cat 5 hurricane.
Pretty impressive.
But you know what would have been more impressive?
What's that?
Had they used swarming drones to help find people.
Yeah.
You know, you know what would have been really, really, really impressive?
What's that?
Swarming drones that flew on fuel cells.
There you go. Yeah, perfect. With long endurance, yeah.
Max's drone wet dream. A fuel cell swarm.
All right. University of Colorado, Boulder. Their researchers are developing technology that allows a single operator to control multiple drones or swarms. Now, they've got a special COA from the FAA, don't they, David?
Yeah, and this COA is kind of different. It allows one pilot to fly up to 30 drones at one time. That's a definite COA that you would be surprised that the FAA actually let go through.
The project leader is Associate Professor Eric Frew, and he says of the new COA that it allows for a, quote, zone defense, where the visual observers monitor the edge of the flight environment without having to monitor individual aircraft. And he said, this is an example of what we call beyond visual line of sight, an important capability for the drone industry. Fascinating stuff. Now, this project is something that, it's a collaboration, an international collaboration.
With the Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. The Korean team's doing the math, developing the control algorithms, and Boulder's responsible for implementing the algorithms and flying the aircraft. You know, you don't think of beyond line of sight. We've talked about single drones and package delivery, but if you're going to fly swarms, you're going to be beyond line of sight because you're operating more than one. So I think we've moved away from the nightmares of swarming drones to now we've got to get practical and see what they would how they would do it. One of the things that I heard in passing, but I wasn't able to follow up with, was instead of dropping sonar buoys, GONZO, which is NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association's Gulfstream G4, its name is GONZO, was dropping drones from it into Hurricane Irma to test wind speeds. I wasn't able to find that out, but they were talking about swarming drones, dropping them into the hurricane. If anybody can confirm that GONZO did it, or Piggy or Kermit, which are the two P3s, the WP3Ds, let us know, because I'm curious. I heard it in passing, but I could never find the backup for it. But it would be really neat to find out that NOAA was using drones as well as atmospheric buoys to measure the winds of Hurricane Irma.
Well, I think that's about it for this episode of the UAV Digest. We want to thank all of you for listening, as always. And you can find us on our homepage at the UAVDigest.com. We've also got there some show notes for this and every episode that have links to the news stories, as well as items associated with the topics that we discuss. And you can go straight there by visiting the UAVDigest.com/210.
And of course, Max, we need to let everybody know we're almost 2 weeks away from me being in Toronto at the Big Drone Show.
Yes.
And I will be there covering the show for the show. And I hope to meet people and chat them up, talk to everybody. And that would be September 27th and 28th. I will be at the downtown Toronto Convention Center at the Big Drone Show. So if you see a guy wearing a UAV Digest shirt, say hi. That would be me. And I look forward to talking to everybody. But if you want to talk to us before then, why don't you join our Slack listener team? Our Slack team you can join is all of our high power users and gets into a lot of conversations that are really beyond the scope of what this historian understands. But we have a lot of really interesting conversations. And you can get an invite by just writing feedback at theuavdigest.com. Say hi to Max and I and provide us your email address and we'll send you an invite. Or you can chat us up on Facebook at facebook.com/theuavdigest. Or you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. We've got thousands of listeners now, and I try to keep that up to date with some of the really cool news stories that we don't talk necessarily on the show. Or if you really just want to be intimate and send a lone email saying Max is absolutely right about fuel cells and swarming drones, you can write him to feedback@theuavdigest.com, or you can be really intimate and write max@theuavdigest.com. And if you want to talk to me, you can always write david@theuavdigest.com. You can find us on Stitcher, Google Play, and of course, iTunes. We'd love for you to leave a review there. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. And of course, go to our homepage to check out the upcoming drone conventions. We've got a pretty comprehensive list there. Check out our sponsors who make this all possible. So with that, I'm going to say this is David, sleepless in Philadelphia.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.